Today, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, is Daf Nun Gimel. Chamor Yotzei B'mar Da'at B'zman She'ikshura Bo. We're continuing on our discussion of what is considered to be a proper beget, so to speak, for an animal. It would allow you to actually carry, the animal would be allowed to wear it, it wouldn't be called carrying. Now, I just want to point out that we're going to see more of this in today's Daf. That the fact that the Torah is mitzave you with a mitzvah saseh that includes the man yanuchu of Shabbos on your shor and your chamor and your behema, one of the issues that are involved over here, if it would have said only that it's an issue of not doing melacha, which it does say, but over there the Chazal learned not that not doing melacha means using your animal. And it certainly doesn't mean not allowing the animal to do melacha for itself, like picking up some grass from the field and being kotzer. So the idea of here, leman yanuach, is that Shabbos is meant to be a responsibility of yours in terms of menucha, which is remarkable. It's not just to don't do things with the animal. It's to give your animal a sense of menucha. Now, obviously, what that does is it extends the understanding of the human relationship to animal, brings it back to its roots in Maaseh Bereishis, and sees the interrelationship as being part and parcel of your Shabbos. And if that's the case, then the inyanim of this part of this perek and the inyanim of the daf are going to be issues of sensitivity. Because if we're looking for menucha from the point of view of the animal, then we have to become sensitive to the animal's needs and to know the difference between an extreme need, a more gentle need, something that's just there to make the animal feel happier, something that's there in order to alleviate pain. And it's because of this that Shabbos becomes the opening for us to the inyanim of refuah of behema, care for behema, and so on. So keep that in mind as we go through. It appears to be sometimes sort of picayune issues about what is the din legabi, the animal for Shabbos, that these actually are issues that deal with our entire relationship with the question of the animal. So the chamor is allowed to go out with a marda'at, bizman she'ikshura bo. The marda'at is this blanket that you put on a chamor. It goes underneath the saddle and is rarely taken off. And that's because, as we're going to see later on, the chamor, particularly among other animals, suffers from a feeling of chill. And even on a very hot day, it appreciates a blanket. And I'll tell you a little story about that later on. Zecharim yotzin levuvim. Now, we're about to use a lot of different terminology that the Gemara is going to get into because it's machlokas and about exactly what it means. So we won't worry about it now. Zecharim don't mean males of all animals. Zecharim are a way of referencing rams, the same way that a stag in English particularly refers to an active male, stag. So too in Hebrew, an active male, a zachar, is a reference to an ayil, which is a stag. They're allowed to go out levuvin, and the ewes are allowed to go out shechuzot, kivulot, and kivunot, all to be explained in the Gemara. Goats are allowed to go out tsurot, and tsurot means that the udders are tied. Now, there's two reasons for tying an udder. One would be to dry up its milk supply. If you want to dry up the milk supply, you would have to tie up the udder tightly. And the reason you'd want to dry up a milk supply would be because you'd like it to get pregnant again. So you want to start it off, or you'd like it to get fat and not waste all of its energy in the production of a milk supply that you don't need. The other reason would be you would tie a container underneath the udder because you dafka want the milk, and so you would be putting it there in order to catch any dripping milk that shouldn't go to waste. It would be part of the milking of the animal. Here, the Tanakama, which is Rabbi Meir, is matir tsurot. Rabbi Yossi asers all of the above, except for rechelim kvunot, which is a way to keep the wool fresh and new, as we'll see. And Rabbi Yehuda says, well, it depends, benogea v'tzrorot. The izim, they can go out with a tightly tied udder, because that's going to be drying up the milk supply, and there's no problem of its falling off. Now, note that this is the first time we discussed the issue of falling off in the Gemara. And as I've pointed out so many times, the Gemara early introduces a Mishnah to come. So the introduction of this concept that you might have to worry that something would fall off, that we discussed yesterday, right, for the first time we started talking about that, it's an introduction to the first time that a Mishnah actually takes this into consideration. And this is Rabbi Yehuda Shita, that it depends actually what it is that it's going out for. So is it going out in order to dry? If it's going out in order to dry, then it's considered to be not a masui. But if it's going to, it's going out for the purposes of catching the milk, then it's considered to be a problem. Okay. It's not clear from him what exactly the problem would be. But as I said, we may have a couple of issues here. And one of them certainly is that if it's tied loosely to catch the milk, you can't pull it up against the actual udder. And because of that, it might fall off and you would carry it. We'll see later on that there may be another issue that's involved in Rabbi Yehuda. Omar Shmuel, when we say that you're allowed to go out with a mardat on a donkey, it's only if that mardat was tied on before Shabbos, but not if it needs to be tied on Shabbos. And there are a number of different approaches to this. One is Rashi's approach over here, that if it isn't tied on before Shabbos, so then it looks more like it doesn't really need it, because how come it wasn't wearing it before? So if it doesn't really need it, it's not considered to be a beged. And if it's not a beged, it's not bottled to the body. And being not bottled to the body means that it's a masui on Shabbos. In the Yerushalmi, it's mashma, that the problem over here is that we're afraid that if you are going to tie it on Shabbos, the only way that you can tie on something on a chamor with any kind of ease is to lean against the animal, to support your weight by against the animal as you put your arm around and underneath in order to tie it. But since you're not allowed to be mishtamish with a bal chai, because of that, the Rabbanan asered putting it out, and if you tied it during Shabbos, because we don't want you to tie it during Shabbos. Omer Reb Nachman, you can see from our Mishnah later on, the Seifa of the Mishnah, that of course we're talking about where it was tied on an Erev Shabbos. Why? Because later on, it talks about the cases that are the mirror image of these cases. So there it says, but a chamor cannot go out with the mardat if it isn't tied on. Now, explain to me what that means. It's not tied on at all? I need a Mishnah to tell me that? I mean, obviously, if it's not tied on at all, so then Dilma Nafal of Atilatuya Arba Amos. Here again, we see clearly that the issue of Arba Amos and the possibility that you may carry it, which we only alluded to, not in the Mishnah earlier, has now suddenly become central to our discussion. It must be, therefore, that when the Mishnah says that it can't be carried if it isn't tied on, it means if it isn't tied on before Shabbos. In which case, the Reisha, which is the mirror image of the Seifa, and says if it is tied on, you can carry it. That's talking about where it was before Shabbos, just like Shmuel. In which case, Shma Amina, indeed, Halacha is like Shmuel. Tanya Mihachi, and there's a Braita that spells it out. Chamor can go out with a mardat if it was tied before Shabbos, but it cannot go out wearing an ukaf, which is a saddle, even if it was on it before Shabbos, because an ukaf is not considered to be a beged, it's considered to be a masui. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, the truth is that, look, it may be so that wearing a saddle is mostly for purposes of carrying things. However, you must admit that the saddle also adds some heat, right? So because of that, it's going to be more comfortable with the saddle. So if the saddle was tied on before Shabbos, it could even go out wearing an ukaf if it was tied from Erev Shabbos. However, if this saddle has masrichin, which are these straps that you use to secure a load, that's usher, because then it really looks like you're tying it on over here for no purposes other than that you want to use it for carrying, not for its own comfort. And furthermore, this, by the way, we do this on cars also. You have your roof rack. And what you do is you tie on these straps on the sides. So you could put things on your roof rack and then you can tie it tightly. And we also tie the front and back of the roof rack so that when the car accelerates, things don't fall off. And when the car stops, things don't fall forward. The same thing is true of the chamor. We attach things from the side to hold them on. And then you put also a yivshol through tzuatachatznavo. We also put something that holds the saddle from beneath the tail of the animal to prevent it from sliding forwards if it's heading downhill. And we put something, the same thing around the neck as well, in order to prevent it from sliding off if the animal's going up a hill. Would you be allowed to put a marda'at, which is the cloth that the donkey wears? By the way, just as an aside, I would like to point out to you that the lashon of a marda'at relates profoundly to the concept of eved, of beged in Gan Eden, because what it basically means is the bitterness of da'at, right? Marda'at. And the question of chamor bli da'at, remember chamor is always the example of we call something chamor bli da'at. That's why they make fun of Chabad. It stands for chamor bli da'at, right? I'm sure you've heard that one. So that's an expression that where there is no da'at, that's where you wear a marda'at, so that it stems from the same core as Beged in Gan Eden, which is very much part of our concerns over here for Shabbos. So are you allowed to put the marda'at on the chamor on Shabbos or not? So Rav Chiya bar Rav Ashi said to him, yeah, it's okay. So Rav Asi said to him, why is that true? We said we're not allowed to put an ukaf on, and that was the whole question. Well, we can't put the ukaf because you're going to be leaning on it or whatever. So why is this basically different than an ukaf? And Rav Chiya bar Ashi didn't answer him, which led Rav Asi bar Nosson to think, says Rashi, that he must have felt that there is no difference between an ukaf and a mardat, and in fact, an ukaf would also be mutter to put on. And therefore, Rav Asi bar Nosson brought a raya against that das to show from the braita that it's not mutter to put on. Because it says over here that if you have a chamor that is wearing an ukaf, you can't take it off with moving it with your hand. Because that's like a tircha she'ena tzricha. Why are you bothering to do this? All you should do is walk the donkey back and forth. It'll fall off by itself, ultimately. So why should you lift it off? Now, I mean, just imagine. If you're not allowed to take off the ukaf, which is a lot easier, you're certainly going to not tell me that it's going to be mutter to put it on. Lahaniach mi boy. I mean, this is similar to the car seat, right? I mean, getting that car seat into that seat. Oh, my God. To release the car seat, mamela, even the husband can do that. But to get the car seat in, that's insane. You can try for 5 minutes, then you just say, listen, dear, either you put it in or keep the kid at home. Okay, so obviously you wouldn't be allowed to be meniachet. Omar le Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Zera said to Rav Asi bar Nosson, would you please leave Rav Chiya bar Ashi alone? And stop asking him questions about this. Because basically, he is going like Rav. The Omer of Chiya bar Ashi, Omer Rav, and that's his Rebbe. And he quoted Rav as saying, Tolin traskal abeima b'shabbat. You're even allowed to hang a traskal. A traskal is a light feeding bag, so that you put it around the neck. And that way, the animal doesn't have to bend to pasture. It can simply chew at its leisure as it's walking along. And you're even allowed to do that. So now, that would mean that it's a kal v'chomer that you could put a mardat, because the whole point of putting on a traskal is why? In order to give the animal pleasure, that's all that it is. It's mishum ta'anug. I mean, an animal can eat perfectly well without a traskal. You're not working with the animal, so the point isn't over here to make sure it's refueled in the middle of its work. So what are you putting on a traskal for on Shabbos? Because you want to make life easier. What do you have? Your poor animal is going to have to bend down to get food out of a feeding trough. Give it some extra tainug on Shabbos. After all, Shabbos karasel, Shabbos oneg, right? So according to Rav, you would even be sensitive to your animal's need for tainug on Shabbos. Koshikane, where you've got a mardat, where over there without the mardat, it's going to feel chilly. And over there, you're trying to avoid it feeling chilly. So it's mishum tsar, for sure, you would be allowed to do it. And okay, so that means that according to Rav, you could do all of these things. So that means Rav said you're allowed to put on a treskal, certainly a mardat. But the truth is Shmuel argues, and he says a mardat you could put on, but a traskal, you're not allowed to put on. A mardat you could put on because that is going to prevent it from having tsar. But a traskal, which simply provides oneg, That is not something that you could do on Shabbos. Also, Reb Chiya bar Yosef, Omer l'Shmaitz, the Rav came to Shmuel. Reb Chiya bar Yosef went to tell Shmuel that Rav said that you're allowed to give oneg to the animal as well. Omar lei, so Shmuel said to him, well, I can tell you one thing. If my dear friend Abba, or if it's either friend, some places Rashi says it's friendship, but other places it's the lashon of covet. If that's what he said, I can only tell you one thing. He don't understand Shabbos at all. He doesn't know anything about Hilchos Shabbos. So lo yada b'mila de Shabbat v'lo klum. Now, this is a rare kind of lashon that we find once in a while from Shmuel based on a particular psak of Rav, which had to do with whether you're allowed to provide onik for Rebbes on Shabbos by putting them underneath a mardat in a bed. That's a question, whether it happens b'shas daf yomi or not. So it depends how much tzar the Rebbe is having. So the Hasidim actually debate this question, and that the poor Rebbe has to put up with their debates. But anyway, he tries his best. So the question over there, I think, must be that there are certain particular issues that they actually pertain to the entire way that you understand the relationship of the particular thing to the overall halachas, which is an amazing kind of thing. In other words, the fact that Shmuel would pick a couple of times on particular things that Rav would say, and that means he doesn't understand anything about that sugya. Well, he didn't understand anything about the sugya. I mean, just because of this one nafkamina, whether we would go so far as to say tanug, or whether we just say that it's alleviating tsar. So apparently there are key issues that go down to the basics of how it is that you look at what Shabbos is. And therefore he's saying, if he's tining that tainug would work on Shabbos for a behemoth, then he doesn't understand the nature of the whole tzivui of Laman Yanuach, which means that there's something missing in the chibur that he has to the dinim of Shabbos. Amazing thing. Kisolik Rabbi Zera, when Rabbi Zera went to Eretz Yisrael, he bumps into Rabbi Yorma bar Yefet, and Rabbi Yorma bar Yefet sits down and starts telling Malacha in the name of Rabbi Yoch. And he says, Notnim mardat agabi chamor b'shabbat. You could put this mardat on Shabbos. And Rabbi Zera said to him, oh, that's a very good psak. And I can tell you that back in Bavel, we heard exactly the same psak from Aryoch. So yasher. Now, remember that Aryoch was the name that was used for Shmuel. Why? Because Aryoch in the First World War, was the king of Elasar. And Elasar can be read as El, not Isur. So Shmuel was a king, he was a melech, but not in Isur. Because the halacha is not like Shmuel in Isur, it's like Rav, but it is like Shmuel in Dine. So they used to call Shmuel Aryoch. So now the question is, why in the world did Rabbi Zera say that Aryoch said that? Aryoch manu Shmuel, but I thought Rav for sure said that. Rav said you're allowed to put on a mardat. I mean, he also said you're allowed to put on a traskal, but I mean, why would you say that this thing about the mardat is only according to Shmuel? I'll tell you why, because Rabbi Zera also heard Rabbi Binyamin bar Yefes saying at the end of his statement, the ein tolin traskal b'shabbat. So that, he couldn't say was from Rav. So that he said, oh, so what you said was good, yasha. And not Rav. Okay, but anyway, it's clear that everybody seems to agree, both Rav, Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan, for sure a mardat is okay. But didn't we just see the Braita before, and we never dealt with the problem, that the Braita says, beferish, that if you want to let an ukaf loose, you're not even allowed to move it with your hand, which means you can't put it on. So what's the difference? I don't get it. Why is it so different between a mardat and an ukaf? There it's different. Your diak is wrong. The only reason that it says that you shouldn't move it with your hand is because to take it off, you don't need to move it with your hand. It doesn't imply that you can't move it with your hand to put it on. Because since to get it off, efshed enough of a mamela can fall off by itself, why be matriach? So what we're talking about over here is a tircha on Shabbos, which is only something that we allow you to do. Note that the entire context of tircha comes from the idea of laman tanuach. So if there's a concept of a mitzvah to be nach on Shabbos, that goes beyond avoiding melacha. It also goes into resting and not doing things that require exertion and frustration. And therefore, the heter to be oisek in something that is not menucha would only be if it provides menucha to your animal, leman tanuach. So therefore, if it isn't necessary for you to exert yourself, then you wouldn't be allowed to exert yourself. Masha ain't came to put it on, which may be for the animal's comfort. So over there, you are allowed to. And therefore, you're diak from the brighter. That kol shekein. No, it's not a kol shekein at all. Rav Papa says, exactly. Of course it's not a kol shekein. Kan l'chamama. You're putting on a mardat. What are you doing? You're warming up a chamor. If you have any sensitivity to your chamor, you see that it always feels chilled. It's always trying to warm itself. And therefore, if you're talking about taking off an ukaf, that's going to cool it down. Believe me that a chamor does not care if it's got too much heat. It only cares if it doesn't have enough heat. So lechamama, in order to warm it up, that means that you're alleviating pain. Because lechamama eat letzara. But letzana na let letzara. That's what people say. You know what people say? A chamor... Afilo bitkufas tamuz karirala. A donkey is chilly to the bone. Even if it's the middle of the summer, it's going to be chilly. Now, here's the story I want to tell you. It's such an adorable story. So Reb Lazer Silver, who lived at the early stage right after the war and before the war, he lived in Cincinnati. Cincinnati was the center of reform in the U.S. That's where the seminary is and so on. And he used to go out and fight the reform, which is extremely unpopular in those. He was the only Orthodox person, really, around there that was trying to fight reform. And every time he and the reform rabbi would bump into each other, there was always some kind of exchange. And Reb Lazer Silver was a very, very interesting character, to say the least. I remember one of the beautiful things that when he backed his car out of his driveway and went straight into a tree that was planted near his driveway. His response was, "Where is the idiot for such a pflanzt a bäum? What's the idiot that planted a tree here? You gotta be nuts." Anyway, so one time, there was another beautiful story. They were once traveling. He was in the back of a car. Yeshiva guy was driving him to attend a conference in Canada. So he stopped. He stopped by a cop, right, for speeding. So the guy says to the cop, "Listen, you know who I have in the back over here? I have like the chief rabbi of America." And he sticks his head out of the window and he says, "Aunt Canada." So anyway, this is the character we're talking about. And the rabbi bumps into him, and his minhag was that he always wore, as part of the covet of Orthodoxy in the Rabbanus, he always wore this big, heavy, black, long rock, right? Because, I mean, after all, he saw himself as a continuation of Europe. So he's walking along on this hot summer day, which was around Pesach time. It wasn't boiling hot, but it was hot. And this rabbi bumps into him, sees him with his long rock, and the Reform rabbi says, "Chamra filo betkufas tamuz karirala." So he's calling Reb Silver, he's calling him a chamor. To which he responded, "Of course. You know why? Because a chamor can't tell the difference between a cool day and a hot day. So he figures, if it's summer, it must be hot. So because of that, he doesn't put on his coat. So because of that, he's freezing, because he thinks you do things the way everybody else does it. Anybody with brains looks at the temperature." Anyway, that's the story of chamra. All right, but in any event, this was the mocker of the chamra afilo betkufas tamuz karirala. Because of that, anything that you do to warm it up, it's going to be appreciated. So, according to Shmuel, you're not allowed to do something that is a ta'anug for the chamor, meitve. Lo yetze hasus bizanav shual velo bizahurirut shebein einav. I don't know if you guys remember, I don't know if they still do this, but it used to be very popular to hang a rabbit's tail from your mirror in the car. Do they still do that kind of thing? Hang crazy things from the mirror? I don't know. Maybe in Harlem they still do. Okay, but it used to be something that everybody did. So in those days, when your car was a sus, so they hang the rabbit tail, or in this case it was a fox tail, they hang it between the eyes of the sus. Or maybe they would put on the beautiful decorative red ritsua between its eyes. It makes it very pretty. So that you're not allowed to do. And lo yetze azav v'kishila, remember we had this early on in the Masechet, whether that's considered to be carrying, it's similar to the case of the finding the chalav in the goat. So over here, you would have to tie this little pouch to make sure that you're catching any zivas, because you need to be able to count the number of re'ios that you had. Obviously, it's not a normal way to carry something around your genitals, but the question over here is that considered to be for Azov? Well, we got into the whole shaila, remember, about whether itzulei mitinuf, which I hope you wrote down in your concepts, saving something from getting dirty, whether that's considered to be a carrying or not. Velo izim bekisha b'dadehem, you cannot put this pouch under the udder of the A's, which, of course, this is going to relate back to our Mishnah. We're going to talk about it in a moment. Velo para b'chasom shebepia, if you want to muzzle a cow, then you're not allowed to walk out with it. Just to prevent it from eating in other people's rishus, you can't do that because it's certainly not for its shmirah. It's for you. Now, note that the first time it mentions Rishut Rabim, even though the whole thing was talking about Rishut Rabim, is where you're talking about a sayach, a colt. So you can't put a feed traskal around it if you're going to be taking out the Rishut Rabim, which is mashma that you can in Rishut Sayachid. You can't put on a shoe around an animal's foot. This, of course, is opposed to a horseshoe, which is nailed into the foot, but an animal's sandal to protect it from a territory that's hurtful can fall off. And you cannot go out with a kamiya, which is an amulet to cure an illness, even if that is a proven by experiment useful kamiya. And that, which we assume is referring to the kamiya, is something that is more chomer on an animal than it is in an adam, because a human is allowed to wear a kamiya that's been proven to be effective, and an animal cannot. However, an animal can go out with an ege chagabe hamakaf, it's wearing a bandage, or bekashishin chagabe shever, it could be wearing a splint to cure a fracture, or b'shulya medudeletba, you often find an animal has a little piece of placenta that still hasn't come fully out. That's considered to be part of the animal. It's not considered to be carrying. And pokakingla, if you will put a piece of material inside the bell to stop it from making noise, then you could do that in the chotzer, walk around the chotzer, because you're not making sound on Shabbos, which is usher, and it does not look, therefore, like you're trying to take the animal out to the market, which people would do, and they would put these bells on it to bring it up. Anyway, but for us, what's important is that it says you cannot put a feed bag around a colt's neck. Now, it specifies for the first time over here, you cannot do rishus a rabbit, which is mashma, that there's no problem in the chutzah. And I'm assuming that this colt is old enough to be able to feed on its own, even if you wouldn't have put the feed bag around its neck. And therefore, it's saying over here that you are allowed to give pleasure, it's Einik Shabbos, for these siachim, that they should have an easy meal for Shabbos, which is a raya against Shmuel. This is going on Libet Rav, who says that Tainuk for an animal is mutter. Says the Gemara, why? Maybe it's talking about over here, Dafka Ktanim. They're very young, undeveloped colts, and it's difficult for them with their short necks to be able to eat bichlal. They have to go down on the ground. And therefore, it's mishum tsar. It's not just as a tainuk. And that, of course, Shmuel is ma'ida. And by the way, if you look at the context, it seems clear that that's what we're talking about. Dekanami, Diktani, it says over here, the din of the traskal comes together with the din of the kamea, right? So that means it's dumya de kamea. What's the point of a kamea? The point of a kamea is that you're going to cure an illness, which is mishum tsar. And it's not mishum tainuk. So shma, we know that we're dealing over a mishum tsar. Now, another thing that's weird is you said over here, lo kamea afa pishu hu mumcha. But in the Mishnah, legabe humans, it says over the velobe kamea she'eno mumcha, which is mashma that if it is mumcha, you are allowed to go out. And why would we have a different din for an animal than we would for a human? If a human is allowed to wear a kamea, and it's considered to be something that is useful and therefore part of the shmira of the human, why won't it be a shmira for the animal? So the answer is the Gemara, well, no, we're talking about that it isn't proven. So it didn't go through the FDA. So, I understand. What do you mean? Eino mumcha? The price says befinished that even if it is mumcha, you're trying to tell me to talk about that it isn't mumcha? No, you understand. The Braita means even though the kamiya was found to be effective for humans, It is not effective for animals. It hasn't been proven effective for animals. That's the point. So that's what we're saying, that don't make the mistake of thinking that just because something works for human illness, it's going to work for animal illness. Now, ask the Gemara, is there such a thing? That is mumcha l'adam v'lavim mumcha l'behema. Now, this is very problematic because, as the Rishonim point out, it's always that way. There are many, many types of medications that work on humans, not on animals. And there's many types of illnesses that are specific to humans and not to animals and vice versa, which the Gemara discusses all the time, even including, the Gemara was even aware, which is amazing, of the similarity of a pig digestive system to the human and that things that affect pigs, which is why we use them so often for transplants and things like that. So the idea over here is that, asks the Ritva, the Gemara's kasha makes no sense. Obviously there's such a thing. And therefore he explains that the meaning of this would be that the person who made the kamiya is a mumcha. That's the point. And because we're going to see later on that if a person has successfully created three working kamiyas, then he's considered to be, without testing the particular kamiya that he makes, he's considered to be an expert kamiya maker. In which case, is it not true that he would be an expert kamiya maker for an animal as well? So shouldn't it be the same thing? No. It's not the same thing. There is a big difference. So humans who have this concept of mazala, it's harder to get rid of them and easier to deal with them. And that mazal, whether it's a malach, as Rashi says, or it's just a general sense of being more attuned with the universe in terms of survival, there, a kamiya is more likely to be helped working. But behemah, it's not. So then, if that's the case, it's not chomer b'behemah b'adam. You said it that this is something that's more chomer. We're more makbid on the behemah. It's not that we're more makbid, it's just that we don't have a kamiya that's mumcha. You said it's more, it's exactly the same. An adam can't go out with a kamiya that's not mumcha. No, you thought that was referring back to the kamiya? Wasn't referring back to the kamiya. It was referring back to the sandal. A human is allowed to wear a sandal to protect his feet. And a behemah is not allowed to wear a sandal to protect her feet. That's the chiddush. And that, of course, was because it was more likely to fall off. Tashma, how about this price? Okay? Let's see whether you're allowed to do things for taking away pain from an animal, which both Rav and Shmuel held. Here it says in the Braita, you're allowed to put oil over a sore, and you could be befarchasin, you could scrape a scab that is loose for a person. But ein sakin befarchasin lebeima, you cannot do that on an animal. Now, I mean, this obviously is referring to a place where you have some kind of wound, right? And therefore it's causing pain. And the issue over here is Mishum Tsar. It's not Mishum Tainug. I thought that Rav and Shmuel both agree that Mishum Tsar should be mutter. Answers the Gemara, no. We're talking over here that the Makah has healed, which leaves you a scab that when you scratch it off, it gives a certain amount of pleasure. And that is talking about Tainug. So that because of that, it at least would be okay. According to Shmuel, according to Rav, it's a problem. Okay. Toshma. Be'ema shachazat dam, in ma'midin ota b'mayim b'shvil shetitztane. If an animal has achazat dam, the reason I know what this means is from reading Harriet, who describes some cases that he had, which are exactly this problem. It's referring to sunstroke, which raises the blood pressure and the temperature of the animal to such a degree that the only thing he was able to do was to get it into freezing cold water as quickly as possible. And that provided a complete cure. So if it has an achizas dam, you cannot allow it on Shabbos to put it into water to cool it off. But if a human is achizas dam, you can allow him into water. So isn't that in order to take away tsar? Amar Ula. There, it's a gezeirah, because since it's being done as a medical procedure, it's the same way we have a gezeirah on Adam. We have a gezeirah, mishum shkikat samamanim, we're afraid that you'll be over nisr d'oraita, and grind medicine on Shabbos. Understand? So then why is it mutter for the Adam? There's not allowed to do a unless it's, of course, the sakonas nefashas, but you're not allowed to give medicine to a human, or even if it's a chaylosh emba sakonah. Yeah, but an Adam, you see, he appears to be taking a swim. So, okay, so he's cooling off. So people sometimes put their feet in the water to cool off. So then an animal also looks like it's cooling off. Animals don't go swimming to cool off. Of course, all the pictures that are currently going around of the Orov that is affecting the world, in which everybody's swimming pool is filled with bears or all other kinds of animals, seems to show the other. Well, the Beima Migazvina, the question over here is whether that's true. You're saying we make a gezeira about shchikat samamanim on an animal, but we have a raya that anything that's because of a gezeira, which is going to cause you a loss in terms of your mamon, we don't make for an animal because v'atanya, I tell medet chutz l'tchum. Let's say your animal's outside of your tchum, so you're not, remember that the things that you own, your kalim, your animal, all have the same tchum that you have. And you're allowed to call that animal, and it'll come into your tchum, and we are not going to be gozer over there. For if we allow you to call the animal, you may end up going out of your tchum and get frustrated and try to bring the animal in, and then you'll be over and going out of the tchum. So we see that we do not make a gezeira about things that you might do if it involves not doing something usser, and the gezeira would involve losing money. Says the Gemara Maravina, that case is talking about Konshaya, Tchum Shalom Uvla, but Tchum Shalom. It's talking about that there's an overlap of the Tchumim, and therefore we're not really worried that you might go outside. Now, according to Ula, Shchikat Samamanim is true even Lagabe a Behema, as a Gezera. Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak says that is not necessarily the case, because I can show you there's a machlokas tanoim about that. Shrikat samamanim guf is a machlokas tanoim, because in the Braita it says, if an animal overeats because it had too many of those delicious vetches, then what you can do is, sometimes, in order to get it to loosen its bowels, which are now, it's a tonic, it's the stomach is not doing anything, you gallop it around the chotzer, another Harriet story, and you're not allowed to do that. Lawyer it sent a bechotzer b'shvil shetitrapeke, loosen its bowels by making it run around. Rabbi Yoshaya is matir. Dorash Rava, that's how we pass, that it's mutter. Omar Mar Loyer it says of bekisha lovely is in bekisha b'dadayim. We said you're not allowed to be wearing a pouch on the udder. Vatanya, it says in a brayta, you can. Yotzotis in bekisha b'dadayim. Omar reviewed that it's not a problem. One is talking about, it says it's mutter, it's talking about where it's tied enough that it's for sure not going to come off. It's mahadik. And the other one is talking about where it's not mahadik, it might fall off, and therefore you're going to carry it arbam. As Rav Yosef says, what in the world is wrong with you guys? I mean, like you're throwing out a machlokas tanoim that we just had in the Mishnah? That you're asking a kasha when we know that there are two different shitas about this? Tanoi shakalta mi'alma, the mitzvah machlokas tanoim, which we just had in our Mishnah. Ha'izim yotzot srurot, and Rabbi Yossi says, no. All cases are aser, except for rechelot rekvunot, including the izim, that they're not allowed to go out. Rabbi Yuna says, izim yotzot srurot liyabesh avalo lechaleh. So if one is Rabbi Meir and one is Rabbi Yossi, what's the problem? Rav Yosef says, furthermore, it could be that actually it's not a machlokas tanoim. Because if both prices are going to leave it to Rav Yehuda, then one may be talking about liyabesh, and one may be talking about lechalev. Tanya om Rav Yehuda, there was once a maisa in the izim of Beit Antukia, which undoubtedly is in Barnea's neighborhood, and shoya dadeim gasim. So they had very large udders that would, when they walked, would be scratched along the ground. So they made here the kisim for another purpose, to protect them. There was another incredible story, once we're talking about milk production, in which a guy's wife died, and they were extremely poor, and she left him an infant that needed nursing. And he had no way of hiring a wet nurse. So lo hayalo sachar menikalite. And a nace happened for him. And his own breasts developed niftechula dadin kishnei dadei isha. Vehiniket beno. And he went ahead and nursed his own son. Omer of Yosef. Wow. Bor e kama gadol adam zeh. This guy is incredible. He must have been such a big tzaddik that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did such a nace. Shasalo nace kazeh. Omelo Abai, on the contrary, this guy must have been terrible. Then Adarabba, Kamagorua Adam said, this man is such bad shape that in order for him to be able to save his son, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't give him a parnasa, but Nishtanulu Sidre Bereshis, it wasn't part of the normal way that nature works. The only way he could survive is that the whole Seder Bereshis had to change for him. That's not good. That's bad. By the way, I think, two or three times ago that we had the Daf Yomi, where we had an elderly gentleman who was a famous, he was an artist. He used to come to Daf Yomi, he's no longer alive. But he said, and he was a doctor, actually, before the war, and he said that when he was coming out of Europe, and there were a lot of people on the ship that had just been released from concentration camps, and there were numerous cases over there of infants that needed milk, and mothers were unable to milk them. And he said that those men that were on the boat all developed breasts and were able to nurse those children, which he was absolutely shocked at. And as a doctor, he went to research afterwards, and he discovered that in cases of long-term starvation, like or malnourishment, like in a concentration camp, when people begin eating again, estrogen begins to be formed before testosterone. So because of that, the estrogen in these men's bodies was activated because of the emotional need to provide milk. Yes, Dr. Berger, yes, amazing person. His wife just died, by the way, 2 days ago. Revelio Zilberman sent around an email. In any event, so what happened there apparently is that it's not so much a nishtanalo sidre bereshis under certain circumstances, but in case somebody is like, looks at these gemaras and says, oh, come on, man. I mean, these are things that mamish people that we know actually happened to. Omer of Yuda, bo re'ei kama kashin mizonotav shel adam. Take a look and see that in a sense, it's more difficult for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to provide typical mizonos than to save somebody from this kind of thing. Shadishtanu lov sidri bereshis, and nonetheless, his parnasa was not given to him. Omer of Nachman, look, it's obvious, because miracles happen all the time to people that save their lives, or they're in car crashes, or whatever. And yet you never see food suddenly appearing on your table, right? So, okay, so obviously one is difficult. And you don't see that Ibrum is on it. Turn her up on it. There was a Maisa, once we're talking about these stories in which it's so unusual that it tells us something about the person. There was a Maisa of an individual who married a woman who was missing an arm. And he did not know that she was missing that arm until the day she died. Amar Rav, wow. Take a look at how tsanua this woman was, that her husband never even could see that she was missing a hand. Let me tell you something. She's got good reasons to cover up the fact that she doesn't have a hand. That's not a pella. But the pella is that the man, he was so tsanua that he never even realized that she was missing a hand. Okay, getting on to the Zecharim, can go out Levuvim. What does Levuvim mean? Says Ravuna, it means tutre. They can go together in pairs. What makes you say that Levuvim means in pairs? Tichtiv. Libavtini achotikala. Libavtini is that you've grabbed my heart. So that means that we're very close. We're always together. Ula says Levuvim is a piece of thick skin that you tie to a ram around its heart and around its belly. Kedei shelo yiplu alehen ze'evim, so that wolves don't attack them from underneath. Understand? The wolves only attack males. They don't attack females. No, the males go in front, so they attack them first. Really? What, wolves only attack on front? They don't attack the back? Whoever heard of such a thing? It's very easy for them to take the animals that are lagging behind. No, it's the reason that the males have to be watched is because they're so fat. Oh, really? And the females are not fat? Come on, man. And besides, how do the wolves know what they have it all like so clear? Which one is the male and which one is the female and which one is fat? And I don't believe it. I mean, this is a hunt we're talking about. You know, these are split-second decisions. The reason is because these males, they walk in front, they hold their noses up in the air like they own the world, and they look from side to side like, what dare get in my way? So the wolves take that as a challenge, and it's as if these Elim are going to be attacking them, and they, oh man, that I'm not going to go for. So they immediately try to attack the aisle, which then rears up, which is the derech of an aisle, exposing its belly, allowing the wolf to go jump on them. And because of that, we put the leather around that area. Reb Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar, this is talking about a piece of leather that is tied beneath their genitals. Kedei shelo ya'alu al hanekevot, in order to prevent them from mating. So if you don't want the ewes to conceive, then you need to protect them from mating. So how did we do that? We made sure that the males would not be able to mate. And that way they would continue to produce milk and so on and so forth. How do we know that from the context? Look at the next case. Arechelim yotzot shechuzot. What do you think shechuzot means? Shechuzot means that you lift their tail, the fat tail, up, which exposes the genitals and therefore makes it easier for them to be mounted. So that's kedei sheyalu aleihem zecharim. So in other words, if you bedafka want them to become pregnant in order to increase the milk or to get them to ultimately milk, if they're not milkers, or to increase your flock. So it's mistaber that the two things in the Mishnah were both reproductively oriented, one referring to the males preventive, and one referring to the females encouraging. So therefore, it makes sense to say the reisha is to prevent mating, and the seifa is in order to encourage mating. And I can show you that the lashon of shechuzot means to be exposed genitally. Because when Shlomo HaMelech is describing this whore, he says in the pasuk, "Vihine isha likrato," and here comes a woman to meet him, and shit zona unetzurat lev. So shit zona, the word shit means exposing yourself, and she's just like a zona, netzurat lev. So she's got nothing in her heart but licentiousness, and because of that, we darshan the word shechuzot to be a combination of shit zona. So that's the shechuzah. And therefore it means that she goes out exposed.